Morning. Today's daf in Nedarim Chof Ches. We're starting the Mishnah on Chof Zayin Amud Beis. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Lanas Echonish Machliba Gabriela Bas Shmuel. This entire parak has been dedicated to the topic of Nedarim that aren't meant. Aren't meant, meaning Livo Pive and Shavim. Your heart and your mind are, your heart and your mouth, I should say, is not in the same place. Based on simple contextual clues, it's clear in all this nedarim that we made over the course of this perek that you didn't mean to make a neder. You just said the words, but you certainly didn't mean it. The four categories of nedarim the Mishnah describes that are just simply not nedarim. So just as a quick recap, since the beginning of the perek already started over a week ago. On Yud Tes, in Chof Amud Beis, the third perek began. So the parak introduces to Nidre Zeruzim when I make motivational nedarim. I'm just trying to get you to move from a position. I'm not really intending on making a neder. I just want to bargain with you, and get you to move from a particular position. Nidre Havai with exaggeration. I'm just speaking a little bit in hyperbolic, and that also is only meant as just an exaggeration. I certainly didn't intend to make a neder. Nidre Shkagos. When you forgot, you made a neder, but by accident you forgot that you made the neder, or a number of other examples. And finally, Nidre Onsen. Nidre Onsen is I made a neder, but circumstances beyond my control have prevented me from complying with my neder, or perhaps even tripping the neder. So those are four different examples where the neder is not intended, and since it was an unintentional neder, so therefore doesn't take effect, doesn't need a tamach chacham, there's no she'ela. The neder just simply doesn't get off the ground. That is what we've been learning since the beginning of the parak. Yesterday culminated with Nidre Onsen, and moved the Gemara to a discussion about Asmachta, an interesting discussion in the Gemara that took place regarding Asmachta. But now we're starting the next Mishnah. Now this Mishnah over here is going to take us slightly off topic, not totally off topic, it's still in the third perek, but in other words, we're also going to be talking about various other types of Nedarim that certainly were not intended, as will become clear through the context of our Mishnah and our Gemara. Although, later this morning, I'm going to point to you, there is a subtle difference between these Nedarim that are being expressed in this Mishnah versus the Nedarim that were expressed previously. And later on, we'll highlight those differences. In the meantime, however, let's start the Mishnah. Nojim l'haragim l'charamim ulamochsim. You can make a neder. Let's say someone's coming to kill you. And what you're going to do is, just in order to save your life, you'll make a neder. You'll fabricate some sort of story. You'll even compound the story with a neder that you made. So you could do so in order to save your life. Charamim, let's say someone's coming to plunder. Okay, same basic idea. Right? Someone is looking to take a tremendous amount of money away from you. And what you do is you make a neder to basically tell him, no, don't take the money away from me. The exact example we'll give in just a moment, Mohsen. And let's say you have a tax collector. Tax collector comes and tries to take money from you. And you're explaining to him, no, don't come and take money from me. You can't for the following reason. You give him a story. You substantiate the story with a neder. So the Mishnah says all those are perfectly acceptable. The Mishnah's example, she truma. So just as one example, says the Mishnah, let's say that someone's coming to take your money from you, and you say, oh no, don't take it, it's truma. Just as a point of interest, did you notice that one of the examples over here is a horeg, meaning you have a murderer and he wants to take money from you, and he says your money or your life, and you say, look, I'm really sorry, in other words, I certainly don't want to give him my life, on the other hand, my money's truma, right? And so in other words, please don't kill me because this is truma. So just, yeah, correct, so just imagine, right, that's exactly the observation, that right now he's ready to take your life. In other words, Ritzicha is not one of his big issues in life, right? He's ready for that. But in truma, oh no, I'm not going to eat truma. So it speaks to the idea that certainly his religious compass is somewhat misguided. But okay, but still, the point is that to save your life, you're making a neder, and the neder is saying that this is truma, and you validate the idea that this is truma by making a neder. So again, you're not telling the truth, but you're doing so in order to save yourself, or charamim, not even to save yourself, just your assets, or mokhsin, or tax collector, who's coming and unlawfully taking money from you. Later this morning, it's going to be one of the highlights of today's daf. We're going to ask the question, is a tax collector really unlawfully taking money from you? Right? Isn't that lawful? Law of the land? So stay tuned. The Gemara is going to discuss that. We're going to come back to that point later on. Alpha pishenu truma. I'm sorry, I should have read that part of the Mishnah. Even though what you're claiming is truma is not really truma, but still, the point of the Mishnah is that despite the fact that it's not truma, but you're saying so with a neder, with the validity of a neder, you're allowed to do that in order to save yourself or your money. Another example, the Mishnah says, let's say you say it belongs to the king. Ah, you can't take this, it belongs to the king. And I'm not really sure how the tax collector works, right? Don't take this, you say to the tax collector, it belongs to the king. The tax collector is saying, exactly, that's why I'm here. Because it belongs to the king. Okay, but anyway, I'm not sure how that story goes. But still, the point of the Mishnah is very simple. It's very straightforward. Is that in order to save yourself or your money that's being unlawfully taken, so you could fabricate a story and you could substantiate that story with an eder, and that's exactly the point of the Mishnah. Now, Beis Shammai says, look, up to a neder, not as far as the shvua. Meaning, you want to substantiate your story, and you want to do so with the backing, with the reinforcement of a neder, fine. But you can't go so far as a shvua. Like we've discussed time and again, the Ran says it once again here on today's daf. We're on the top of Chav Chesem and Aleph. A shvua is more severe than a neder. A shvua, the Torah says, lo yinakeh. You will never be fully expunged from a shvua. So a shvua is just simply a more serious and severe form of an oath. So Beis Shammai says, look, you want to compound your story with a neder? Fine. You can't do it with a shvua. Beis Hillel Amrim Af Shvua, and Beis Hillel says, no, we'll go one step further. Meaning, if the shvua is what is necessary to try to convince the person, please don't take my life, please don't unlawfully take my money, and you want to substantiate with shvua, so Beis Hillel says you may do so. Beis Hillel Amrim Lo Yiftach Lo Beneder, or Beis Hillel Amrim Af Yiftach Lo. And Beis Shammai says that you can't initiate a neder. In other words, someone comes over to you and says, I want to take this. And you say, no, don't. It's truma. Right? And then you say, and then he says to you, are you ready to support that with a neder? And then, so according to Beis Shammai, once he initiated the idea of neder, then you can go ahead and you can make a neder. But what you cannot do, says Beis Shammai, is you cannot initiate the neder without first being prompted. And Beis Hillel once again says, no. Beis Hillel on every one of these issues is going to be more lenient. Beis Hillel says, no, you can even initiate a neder. Beis Shammai Amrim Bameshu Madira. And Beis Shammai says that your neder can only be the topic in which is being presented at the discussion between you and the murderer, the tax collector, the plunderer. So, but you cannot go beyond that which is being discussed. And Beis Hillel says, no, you want to take it even further? You may do so. An example, Ketzad, Amalo Oster, Emor Kone Mishtina and Esli. So let's say he's coming to take your money and you say to him, no, the money's truma. Don't take it from me. Money's off limits. It belongs to the king. Right? In other words, it's not my money. Don't take it from me. And then he says to you, really? Are you ready to make a konam? Are you ready to make a neder against your wife in order to substantiate that this is in fact that what you're saying is so? V'amar konim ishu v'anai. Nen and Lee. And he says, my wife's not going to get benefit from me. My kids are not going to get benefit from me if what I'm telling you is false. Okay, so the point is that the murderer, the plunderer, so he only brought up your wife. And you respond and say, making a neder against my wife, I'll make a neder against my whole family if what I'm telling you is false. So Beis Shammai Amrim Ishto Mutaris Avana Vasurim. So Beis Shammai says that the parameters in which you are only allowed to make a neder is only on the topic which he brought up. He brought up your wife. You can only make a neder about your wife. You can't go ahead and volunteer other people to be included in your neder. And once again, Beis Hillel Amrim Elav Elu Mutarim. And Beis Hillel is of the opinion that these and these are mutar. Meaning that even though he didn't bring up your children, but you want to make sure that he totally understands that you're serious and you really mean that this is not your money, this is off limits to you, and you want to back it with a neder, and the neder includes even things that he didn't bring up. So Beis Hillel says you could do that. That's okay. That's totally within your right to do so. Okay. That's the Mishnah. So again, so the Mishnah really does fit into our parak in general, because our Mishnah basically are describing nedarim that aren't meant. You certainly didn't mean this nedarim. The whole point of making such a neder is only to get somebody off your back. Someone who is trying to take your life or your money unlawfully. So you're just trying to basically get them off your back. So there, you're allowed to make a neder. And under these contexts, it's understood that the neder that you're making is just simply to get him away. And he did not mean the neder for that which you said. One of the examples that's given in the Mishnah is a moches. You have a tax collector. And the tax collector comes, so the Mishnah basically puts him under the same category as a murderer and as a plunderer. Okay, so it begs the question, which is the first question, which is really going to be one of the highlights of today, and that is, he's that bad? And more fundamentally, I mean, the question really is a fundamental issue. Meaning, well, you're living in a government, in a country, run by a government, and the government has no right to collect taxes from you, and we have a principle, which the Gemara is about to introduce us to, which is law of the land, dina de machusa dina. And that we know that while we're being hosted by a country, so we know that once they have a law, so we have to follow, we have to abide by the law, and it's not our home, it's somebody else's home, and we're living there. So don't we have to follow it? And how can the Mishnah just simply say, it's okay? Not only do you not have to pay, I mean, the Mishnah really is telling us two chidushim. Not only do you not have to pay, says the Mishnah, but even to the effect where you're going to lie and you're going to tell them, no, it's not, money doesn't belong to you. You can even make a neder to substantiate your lie that the money is off limits. Okay, just one other thing before we start with the Gemara, and that is the way tax collection used to be done in the good old days is that it's obviously the taxes were collected by the government, but the government themselves wouldn't do the actual collection. So what the government used to do back in the good old days is used to subcontract. In other words, basically what you would do is that you would make a bid to the government. Hi, I'm here. I'm ready to collect taxes on your behalf, and you get a portion of the payment in terms of tax collection. So back in the good old days, taxes used to be subcontracted to private groups, private individuals, and they would collect taxes on behalf of the government. That's how it once upon a time it was done. Nowadays, most of the time, it's done by the actual government itself, an agency of the government. Either way, you'll see that it'll help us understand a little bit of the Gemara coming up. The Ha'amar Shmuel Dina de Machusa Dina. So the Gemara says, I quote in the name of Shmuel, that we know that the law of the land is binding. And so why would the Mishnah tell us that a tax collector is analogous to a murderer and a plunderer? He's neither. And moreover, according to Shmuel, you have to pay. Tax collector comes and asks you to pay your taxes, so you have to pay. It's not even an issue. So Amar Rav Chinna Bar Kahana Amar Shmuel Bemochi Shein Lo Kitzva. So the Gemara says like this. Could be one of two things. Maybe the Mishnah is talking about a tax collector that does not have a kitzvah, does not have a set amount. Meaning that, yes, the government does have the right to come and collect, but only a fixed amount. The I guess the today's daf would be a promotion of flat tax. But, okay, I'm not sure if that's an accurate portrayal. But certainly, the idea is that if it's a fair tax that is applicable to every person, every citizen of the country, so then of course you have to pay. And of course, dina demachus adina, and it could be that our Mishnah is describing where ein lo kitzva, where there's no set amount. In other words, he's coming to collect, and he's not sending, and there's no set amount, and that's unlawful, and that's something where now you could say to him, no, I'm not going to pay, or you can make up a story, you can make a neder, substantiate your story according to Beis Hillel, you can even make a shvua that you that this money is off limits to you. Fine, that's one answer of the Gemara. Or according to Debe Rav Yanai, we're talking about where the tax collector is an independent agent, meaning omen me'alav, meaning that this was not some contract from the government. Someone's coming along and basically posing as a tax collector, but really the truth of the matter is he was not invested with the authority of the government. He didn't purchase the rights from the government. He's doing it simply on his own. I'm not really sure then why we're even calling him a moches. He's just plain and simple, he's a thief. Either way, but that's another suggestion in terms of why it is we call him a. That's why you can lie to him if necessary. Yes.
It was known that they also used their power. Sometimes they got physical and they whatever.
Right. You know? It's only from the context of the Mishnah. It certainly seems that it's more than just a money issue. In other words, it certainly sounds like your life is in the balance. Okay, there's a Ran over here. It's a famous Ran. If it's not famous yet, we're going to make it famous. The Ran over here describes and discusses now what exactly is the authority invested within the government to come in to collect taxes. Meaning, Shmuel says, without a source and without any, and the Gemara doesn't give any resistance to the statement of Shmuel. Shmuel's of the opinion, Dina de Machusadina, that the law of the government is binding. And as a result of that, the government wants to come and collect taxes. They have every right to do so. And the only scenario our Mishnah is describing where it's unlawful is either where there's no set amount or he's an independent contractor, but he was not given rights by the government to come and to collect. But otherwise, a government is totally within the right to come and to collect taxes. And the Ran over here discusses why should that be. Okay, intuitively, I think we all know the answer, but the Ran over here formulates in it's a very interesting Ran with a very interesting conclusion that comes out of this Ran. But Moches Ome Me'elav, it is a Ran slightly above where we are in the Gemara. It's about after the lines get narrow, it's another six lines down from there. The Ran writes, I'm reading the Ran inside, Shelo B'mitzvos HaMelech. So the Ran over here, first just explaining the Gemara. The Gemara says that he's an independent contractor and he was not given the authority of the king. Fine. That's where it's unlawful. The Kasva B'tosus, the Davka B'machil of the Kochavim, Amar Dedina D'machus Adina. The Ran quotes Tosfos, the Baliat Tosfos, which again lived prior to the Ran and, you know, even during the Ran, but he's quoting some of the schools of thought of Tosfos. So Tosfos says that this statement of Shmuel is true when you're living in a foreign government. Malche ov de kochavim. Then we say dina da machusa dina. Why? Mimnei sha'ar shalom. Because when you're living in a foreign government, so the land belongs to them. In other words, it's not our land. It's their land. V'yachlula marlehem im lo sasu mitzvasai agaresh eschem min haaretz. And they have the power to expel us from the land. Meaning, the land is property of theirs. And if they want to, we're just guests. And at any point in time, they could say, okay, get out. And how many times historically have we seen expulsions over the last two millennia? So, okay, so it's their land, and anytime they want to, they can expel us from the land. So, therefore, given that they have the right to expel us, so if they want to collect taxes from us, it's within the right to do so. So, in other words, the Ran explains, quoting Tosfos, that the right that a government has to collect taxes from us is based on the fact that it's not our land, it's their land, and therefore they have the right to expel us, and therefore if they want to collect taxes from us, they have the right to do so. I hope you see where this Ran is going. You don't have to wonder. The Ran actually says it. Ava b'malchei Yisrael lo. But obviously, and not, I say obvious, by the way, in the context of the Ran. But obviously now, if let's say the land is ours, the government is ours, in other words, it's a land that we cannot be expelled from. So let's say, for example, Afisha, Eretz Yisrael, Kol Yisrael, Shutaf and Baal. So when we're talking about Israel, and every one of us has a piece of real estate in Eretz Yisrael, right? The right of return is not a modern idea. It's a modern idea. The modern state of Israel obviously gave everyone the right of return, every Jew the right of return. But in other words, the right of return is based on the fact that it's our land. So therefore, any Jew has a right to Eretz Yisrael. And we cannot be expelled from Eretz Yisrael. V'chi amrina dina machus adina. Point number one of the Ran in the books. So the Ran says that in Eretz Yisrael, so we don't have this principle of Dina de Machusa Dina, basically because it's all rooted in the idea that they can expel you from the land, but if they can't expel you from the land, so then we don't have the principle of Dina de Machusa Dina. So obviously it's very interesting. The Ran, if I want to if I want to make, do a caricature of the Ran, if you're living in Israel, you don't have to pay your taxes. Okay, that's the that is the, but that is a caricature of the Ran. I don't think that in today's I mean I'd only be speculating, but in today's Israel, the Ran would be advocating that you don't have to pay your taxes. The taxes in Israel is really it's not some sort of. I know you can be cynical, but it's not some sort of corrupt government that's just taking money for themselves, meaning the money is being used for welfare, medicine, it's education, army. In other words, basically, it's...
Does it make a difference if the ruling government is a Goy government or a government that's not Halachic?
In other words, the Ran is I'm just from the perspective of the Ran. The Ran only uses one variable to really depict and describe when they have the right to collect and when they don't. When it's a foreign government that can expel at any time, so they have the right to collect. That's the way, because according to the Ran, it's all a function of ownership. They own the land. They can tell you to leave anytime they want. Therefore, they can collect taxes. That is all the viewpoint of the Ran in terms of what is the function of what is taxes a function of. Okay, I'm presenting the one side of the issue today. I'm just the Ran. And then the Ran points out, V'chi Amrina, just continuing in the Ran. V'chi Amrina, Dina de Machusa, Dina Hanimi Lelin, Sheim Kana Echa Mechazech, Chayavon Litein Lo Osa Meches. V'chi Nami, Im Lo Kana Oso, Elo Shu Memun Legavos Osa Meches, Shein Rasha Yisola Chave, Lishava Shehen Shuma. The Leka Unsa came into Dina de Machusa, Dina. And then, what I pointed out earlier, but I only pointed out because I read the Ran in anticipation, is that they now have the right to collect taxes, but that only gives a person the right to collect if he's authorized by the government to come and collect. But if he's coming in on his own quote-unquote authority, it's not authority, but if he comes in on his own and he says, hi, I'm here to collect taxes, obviously that's nothing. So the only way that a person can come and collect is only if he was given a stamp and authority by the government to come and to collect. Okay. So anyway, that is Adkan Devar Ran. That is the opinion of the Ran. Not all Rishonim are in agreement with the Ran, that the taxes is really just a function of ownership of land and the right to expel you. But anyway, that is certainly a point of interest and a presentation, hopefully a fair one, of the Ran's understanding of why Dina de Machusa Dina. We continue in the Gemara. We're on Chaf Ches Amud Aleph. We're in the Gemara, three lines down. The two dash shehin shel beis hamelech v'api sheinan shel beis hamelech. So here we go. Hechi nadar. The Gemara wants to know what exactly was the neder that you made. Meaning, again, look at the context of the Mishnah. Someone's coming after you, and he wants your money. He wants your life. Right. In other words, you're in very serious danger. So you're telling him, what exactly are you telling him? So Amrav, Amram, Amrav, Ba'omer. So the Gemara over here formulates what you're allowed to say. Ye'asru, Perasa, Olam, Alai. All the fruit of the world should become forbidden to me. Im, Einam, Shabbat, Amalech. If the money that's in my hands right now does not belong to the king. Okay, so in other words, again, what you're doing is you're formulating a neder, which is, again, not true. The money really is yours. But again, because your money and your life or your life are in jeopardy, so what you could say to them, and someone's unlawfully coming to take it from you, either your money or your life. Your life usually is unlawfully taken away from you, unless you're being executed. But the so in both of those situations, what you can say, says the Gemara as an example, is all the fruit should be ushered to me through a neder if this money doesn't belong to the king. Or the previous example of the Mishnah, if this money isn't truma. So here the Gemara gets interesting. The Gemara says, well, you know, you just declared all fruit in the world to be ushered to you. So you know what should be the result? All the fruit in the world should be ushered to you. Because you said it. In other words, then, because you said it, it's binding. Stay tuned. We're going to come back. We're going to discuss this point even further. First, let's just finish up the Gemara. Ba'omer Hayom. So the Gemara says, well, you know what you say? You say, all the fruit in the world should be ushered to me today if this money doesn't belong to the king. So which the Gemara says, Idamar Hayom L'mekabal Minei. Moches. So the Gemara says, really? Is that what you're going to tell him? He's going to laugh at you. In other words, I swear to you, I promise, all right, this money that you're trying to take from me belongs to the king. I'm telling you, you know how serious I am? All the fruit of the world should be asked to me today if what I'm telling you is a lie. Oh, okay. And really, and that's how serious you are about your statement that they should be also today. Really, don't go on a limb there. I mean, if that's what the neder that you're making, it's not going to be that convincing. So, ba'omer b'libo hayom umotzi b'sfasav stam. So the Gemara says that you say the word hayom b'libo, you say it to yourself, you don't say it out loud. But what you say out loud is just that the fruit of the world is going to be offered to me, and then you kind of mutter under your breath today. And then if the money doesn't belong to you, the afagav disfir lan dvarim shebelev and dvarim legabi onsin shani. Now, generally speaking, we say dvarim shebelev and dvarim, that things in the heart are not considered. Are not taken into consideration, but over here it's onus. Over here, your life is in jeopardy, and as a result, or your money's in jeopardy. And so, over here, under these circumstances, you certainly thought it. You may have even muttered it under your breath. Therefore, it is going to affect the neder, and the neder will not be forever as you dictated. Now, it's interesting. After having done this Gemara, let's ask a very simple question and a very fundamental question. You notice that since the beginning of the parak started over a week ago. Since the beginning of the parak, what exactly has been the theme of this parak? Four different categories in the Dharma that are made, that even though their words were expressed out of your mouth, but either because it's motivational, it was a mistake, it was an ones, it was exaggeration, based on various contexts, even though the words came out of your mouth, but nevertheless, they're not to be taken literally, they're not. It's not a neder. And so, let's just ask a very simple question. Why now, for the first time, did the Gemara say, Dvarim Shebelev Ein Dvarim? You know, matters of the heart, it doesn't matter. If you say the words, so the words have a power, and the words create a neder. And so the Gemara over here had to say, well, this case is different. What do you mean, this case is different? What have we been discussing for the last week? All these cases are cases in which, because of the context, you didn't mean what you said. And as a result of that, throughout this entire parak, we've been saying that it's not a neder. Meaning, it's not a neder that you're going to have to go to a chacham and get a sheila. It's simply not a neder. And now the Gemara is bothered by the fact that, well, I know you didn't mean it, but you said it. Okay, but that's true with everything that we've been discussing up until this point in the parak. So that's a very basic question. And why over here, finally, is the Gemara bothered? Tosfos is bothered by this question, and Tosfos responds as follows. Tosfos, you can see, I know it's small. That's why I just removed my glasses. Tosfos, you could see on the left hand margin of the page. Okay. The alpha gav de sphirolan. There we go. In Tosfos, it is about 7-8 lines from the top of the Tosfos. So it's in the middle of the Dibra Maschal. The alpha gav de sphirolan dvaran shebelev and dvaran legabe onsin shara rabban v'im tomer v'hala el gabe dalin nadar mitira below shum ones. Alpha gav de dvaran shebelev havin dvaran. Okay, good. So Tosfos over here articulates the question. Up until now, from the beginning of the parak until today's Mishnah, until today's daf, we were not bothered by this concept. That even though you utter the words, but still, we understand that's not what you meant. And over here today, you utter the words, and the Gemara says, well, you utter the words. So the Gemara says, well, you said hayom under your breath. Like, why now is the Gemara bothered? So v'yesh lama da'asam ayni taima mishim da'anan sahadi shada'at alakach. So Tosfos answers like this. We have a principle. The principle is called Anan Sahadi. Anan Sahadi, much like the Declaration of Independence, there are certain truths which are self-evident. Meaning certain things that, given a particular context, in other words, there's no need to even consider or look at it any other way. Meaning they're self-evident truths. Anan Sahadi does not mean that there's actual testimony. It means that the truths are so self-evident that basically the truth speaks for itself. In all the other contexts that we gave, in the bargaining table, where I'm saying two and you're saying four, and we're bantering back and forth, and we're making a neder. So there's a certain self-evidence to the idea that I made a neder, I didn't really mean it. You made a neder, you didn't mean it. And that's true with all the examples up until today. But over here now, so it's interesting. This case where someone's coming over to you and saying, look, I need your money. Right? I need your money. I'm taking your money. And now you make a neder. And that neder is there to just, it's not real. It wasn't intended. It was just there so that he doesn't take your money. It's not so clear under these circumstances that your neder was not serious. The cave. I'm sorry. Let me just keep reading in Tosos. The cave and the anan sahadi harikilu pirish behedja v'lohav v'dvarim shabalev avahacha. But over here, leka lemeimar anan sahadi ilav haones uvein tamachachem vein amaretz mitzvah belaones kishamar belibo hayom cave and the loshech anan sahadi. Over here says Tosfos, it's not so clear. It's not so self-evident. Now you have to say something, meaning I understand the basic issue that Tosfos is grappling with. Why now is the Gemara bothered by but you said a neder, as opposed to up until now. So up until now, Tosfos employs the principle of Anan Sahadi. It's evident, just based on the circumstances, that you didn't mean it. Over here, it's not as evident. Why is it not as evident over here? Not clear. Meaning, but he's right. Meaning, obviously there's a distinction to be drawn between today's daf and everything we've learned up until today. I'm not really sure I have a good explanation in terms of why here is it less evident. Someone's coming after your money unlawfully. You said a neder, I think it's pretty clear you didn't mean it. Okay, so you have to flesh it out a little bit better, and I'm not doing a good job presenting why it's different, but certainly you just have to recognize, at least recognize, that today's daf is different than the daf we've been doing since the beginning of the parak.
Why wouldn't this be like a subcategory of onus?
Right, right. Which, again, without our Gemara, you could have easily said. But the Gemara says, well, dvarim shebalev, and a dvarim, you know, you said it, and therefore it's binding. And the Gemara then says, well, you said the word hayom under your breath. Without the Gemara, I would have agreed. I think intuitively I would have said that. But the Gemara says that you have to say Hayom, and you have to say Hayom under your breath. And why? Just put it under the Put it under the category of what we've been learning up until now. Let's go back to the Gemara.
It may be because you're not really sure if it's going to kill you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, there's an element of a very subjective element here.
Right, could be. It could very well be. Okay, good. Okay, back to the Gemara. The Gemara says Beit Shammai Omrim. We're at the right halfway down on the Amud. Beit Shammai is of the opinion Bechol. Beit Shammai Omrim Bameshu Hu Madiro Beit Omrim Afishen Madiro Ketzer Amar Lakoni Mishin Enesli VaAmar Koni Mishiu VaNayna Enenli Beit Shammai Omrim Misham Buteres VaNav Asurim Beit Omrim Elav Elam Mutarim. Okay, a long heading of the Gemara. The Gemara quoted the Mishnah. Amar Rav Huna Tana. So Rav Huna taught the following braisa. Beit Shammai Omrim Lo Yiftach Lo Bishvua. So Beit Shammai is of the opinion that you cannot initiate a shvua. Beit Hillel Omrim Yiftach Lo Bishvua, and Beit Hillel says no, you can even initiate a shvua. So now the braisa, reading the braisa carefully, braisa is a little bit difficult because the Beit Shammai Bishvua Lo Yiftach Abenez Yiftach Lo. So if you read the braisa carefully, what it sounds like is that Beit Shammai is teaching us you can't initiate a shvua. Now again, a shvua is more serious than a neder. Now, if you're reading critically the braisa, what it sounds like it's saying is you can't initiate a shvua, but you're allowed to initiate a neder. Implicitly, that's what the braisa is saying. The problem is we just learned our Mishnah. Our Mishnah taught us that according to Beit Shammai, you can't initiate a neder. So the implication of the braisa seems to be going against our Mishnah. So tanan Beit Shammai Omrim lo yiftach lo b'neder v'su. And the Gemara says, and furthermore, miftachu de lo yiftach lo b'shvua ha-meder nader b'shvua. So the Gemara says, and now, once again, from a critical reading of the braisa, it sounds like you can't initiate a shvua, but what you could do is, if one of these ruffians, if one of these hooligans are demanding a shvua from you, so it sounds like you could do that, according to Beit Shammai. Meanwhile, what do we learn back in our Mishnah? We know that according to Beit Shammai, you can't offer a shvua. You can offer a neder in order to protect yourself or your assets, but you cannot offer a shvua. Not even meaning given initiation, but not even responsive. He can't give a shvua. So Tana Masisa Benedo Lo Dicha Kocha De Beishamai. So Tana Brisa Bishvua Lo Dicha Kocha De Beithilo. So the Gemara says, okay, what we'll have to say is that even though we just read the Brisa very critically, and the critical reading of the Brisa and the deep that came out of the Brisa goes against our Mishnah, the Gemara offers just as a suggestion. Don't be so critical in reading the Brisa. It could just very well be that, on one hand, the Mishnah is showing us the strength of Beit Shammai, meaning look how strong Beit Shammai is in his viewpoint, that you can't initiate a neder. And the Brisa, maybe the whole purpose of the Brisa, is to show us the strength of Beis Hillel. Meaning, Beis Hillel allows you to lie to the point where not only can you offer a Shavua, but you can even initiate a Shavua in the interest of protecting either yourself or your money. That's one way to understand the Brisa. So in other words, simply put, don't read the Brisa that critically. In other words, the Brisa is there just to show us how serious Beis Hillel is taking his viewpoint. Rav Ashi Amar Achi Ketani Beit Shammai Armim Ein She'ela B'Shvua Beis Hillel Armim Yei She'ela B'Shvua. Rav Ashi says maybe what we could do with the Brisa is just simply have the Brisa being understood not in the context of our Mishnah, but a totally different context. Something which we discussed earlier, and that is the following. I make a Shvua. Can I go to a Talmud Chacham and try to get out of a Shavua? Now we know by a neder, we've been discussing it at length, and we're going to continue discussing it later in the Masechta as well, that by a neder, I can go and ask a Talmud Chacham to extract me from the neder, either through a Pesach or through a Charata. But in other words, by a neder, we know that one can extricate himself from a neder. Can one extricate himself from a Shavua? Maybe that's exactly what the Brisa is dealing with. And Beis Shammai says, Ein She'ela B'Shavua. That's exactly what the Brisa is dealing with. According to Beis Shammai, one can only extricate himself from a neder. One cannot get himself out of a Shavua. Meanwhile, Beis Hillel says, no, Yei She'ela B'Shavua. That one can get himself out of a Shavua, even through a She'ela. And maybe that's what the Brisa is dealing with. And if that's so, then the Brisa does not present a problem at all to our Mishnah, because the Brisa is discussing an entirely different issue, an entirely different context. Okay, let's start the next Mishnah. Hare netios ha'elu karbon. You just planted a new tree, sapling. And you make the following declaration. It's going to sound a little bit strange, and without any context, it is strange. The Gemara in just a moment is going to give us some context. Hare netios ha'elu karbon im einan niktzatzos. These saplings are going to be a karbon if I don't cut them down. Talus zu karbon im einan nisrafos. So this talus is going to be a karbon. Talus, not necessarily, you know, talus with tzitzis, but in other words, a cloak, a garment. My garment is going to be a karbon if it doesn't get burnt. Okay, so again, a strange comment. Without any context, it's kind of hard to understand. We're like, what's going on over here? Stay tuned. In just a moment, we'll explain it much better, and we'll give it context. But the Mishnah says, Yesh lam pejon. But the Mishnah teaches us that, okay, in other words, it has Kedusha, and the Kedusha is redeemable. One could redeem the Kedusha. Hare netios ha'elu karbon, ad shiktzosu, tal zeh karbon, ad shetisaref. But let's say now my neder goes the other direction. These saplings are going to be a karbon. The fruit of the saplings, I should say, are going to be a karbon until I cut them down. And this talus is going to be a karbon until it gets burnt. So, ein lahem pijon, there's not going to be a pijon. There's not going to be any way to redeem them because they have kedusha and it's unredeemable kedusha. Okay. Much to be discussed in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is really difficult. It's challenging. Meaning, it's hard to even understand what is even the basic point of the Mishnah. Right? You make a statement, in the first case of the Mishnah, you make a statement about how it says, Kedusha, if I don't cut them, they're going to have Kedusha if I don't cut it down. The talus is going to have Kedusha if it doesn't get burnt. So the Mishnah's point then is that it's going to have Kedusha, but I can redeem it. In the second half of the Mishnah, I declare them to have Kedusha if I don't cut it down, have Kedusha if it doesn't get burnt, until it gets burnt, and there it's not redeemable, meaning the whole What exactly is the Mishnah trying to teach us? And furthermore, the Mishnah is telling us that your neder is effective. Why doesn't the Mishnah just simply say it has Kedusha? The Mishnah then attacks the result of your statement with it's redeemable, it's not redeemable. Really, the Mishnah needs a lot of explanation. We'll start today with the explanation, and tomorrow we will pick it up. The Gemara is on the top of Chav Ches Amid Beis, V'lifnei Kedushos. Now, the Ran takes out the next two words, but either way, V'ein Kedushos. But V'lifnei Kedushos. Question number one of the Gemara. First of all, he's trying to make a neder on his fruit or on his clothing. So why don't we just simply say that the fruit and the clothing have Kedusha? Why does the Mishnah start now with the point of it's redeemable, it's not redeemable? So I did the Baile Mitzvah Seifa Inlan Pijon Tana Nami Reisha Yeshlan Pijon. So the Gemara says, okay, in the second half of the Mishnah is teaching us that it's not redeemable, meaning it has Kedusha and it's not redeemable, for reasons which we're going to discuss tomorrow why that should be. Since the second half of the Mishnah has to teach us a halacha that it's not redeemable, so therefore just for purposes of symmetry, the first half of the Mishnah is telling us that it's redeemable. But really the essential point of the Mishnah is that it has Kedusha. Fine. Now, Heichi Nadar, what is going on in our Mishnah? He's making a neder about his fruit tree. If I don't cut it down, if the talus doesn't get burnt, like what's going on? In other words, a little more context. So he says, if they're not cut today, so then they're going to have Kedusha. In other words, he's basically trying to motivate himself to cut them today. And then what happens? The day comes and he doesn't cut them down. So the Gemara says, okay, well, if he said that if by the end of today the fruit does not get cut, it's going to have Kedusha, so then the day comes and goes, and he didn't cut it, so the fruit's going to have Kedusha. Meaning, what's the Mishnah now teaching us? That if I make a neder with a Tanai, and the condition is fulfilled, then the neder is effective. That's right. Pshita. The Gemara says, now, if that's the entire point of the Mishnah, that's an obvious point. I don't need a Mishnah to teach me that at this point in the Masechta. Latzricha kagon di'ika zika nefisha. So the Gemara says, okay. So what's going on over here is as follows. There is a very strong wind. Right now you're in the middle of a hurricane. And you don't think that the fruit is going to make it on the tree, survive on the tree. And so therefore, now under these contexts, so now you make the following declaration. Let's go back to the Mishnah. So, im ena, right, hare nitiyos ha'elu karbon, im enan niktsatzos. So, these saplings are going to be a karbon if I don't cut them down. Meaning, I'm right now in the middle of a hurricane, the wind is blustering, and it does not look like I'm going to have the ability to cut them down. So, exactly. So, under these circumstances, so I say that it's going to be a carbon if I don't cut it down. Meaning, but if I do cut it down, if for some reason, miraculously, the fruit gets to stay on the tree and I get to cut them down, I'll take them for myself. Okay. Right. In other words, because the wind.
It's not you doing something. It's result of another event happening.
Right, but you're forecasting based on the fact that right now it's blowing outside, it's blowing hard outside. So you're forecasting that the wind is going to blow it down. Okay? The Hakatana la Gabitalis, Vitalis the Strefa Kaima. So the Gemara says, okay, but good. So I get it. So now there's a terrible wind and the likelihood is the fruit's going to blow it down. And look, if I get to cut it, meaning if somehow it survives this storm, so then great, it's not going to have Kedusha. Otherwise, it's going to have Kedusha. Fine. What about the talus and being burnt? Well, what's going on there? So the Gemara says, "Then keep going to Ika Deleika." So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, okay, right now, again, the context regarding your clothing is that there's a fire in the house, and the likelihood is that it's going to get burned by the fire. And so therefore, I say, kind of like as a hope, kind of like as like a prayer to Kadosh Baruch Hu, if my clothing don't get burned down, in other words, because right now it looks like it's going to get burned. Sakadacha da mesika daite delaom is natslan mishum hachi kanadar. So the Gemara says, now, what's the havamina of the Mishnah? The havamina of the Mishnah is that the you probably have given hope, given up hope on it, and so therefore maybe what you're doing is you're investing it with Kedusha either way. Meaning right now there's a hurricane outside, and it's again as a Havamina, I might have thought basically what you're saying is forget about it, right? In other words, the fruit it's a carbon. Right, the house is on fire. Oh, the clothing inside, forget about it. It's a carbon. And what you're not really meaning in your neder is, you know, if somehow the fruit survive, they belong to me. If somehow my clothing don't get burned, they belong to me. Meaning maybe your investment of Kedusha in these items are going to be really... It's like you really did commit them to become a carbon, and even though you stipulated, but you didn't really mean your stipulation. You really just simply said, you know what? Okay, I give up hope. It's like almost like yeish, so to say. That's the Havamina, and the Mishnah is telling us no, that we're going to take your words very literally. If somehow the fruit survived the storm, if somehow your clothing survives the fire, and then you said, if I cut down the fruit, they're not going to have Kedusha. If I'm able to take my clothing out of the house, they're not going to have Kedusha. You actually meant it. Meaning, we'll take your words literally, and we won't just assume that you invested it with Kedusha. Okay, I kind of takes us to the end of the end. And at least now we have a little bit more context in our Mishnah. We understand what at least the first point of the Mishnah is. And tomorrow, we have more to discuss. Again, just a quick recap. We talked today about making a neder in order to protect yourself or your money when it's unlawfully being taken. And the Gemara introduced us to the idea of Dina de Machusa Dina, that generally speaking, the government does have the right to tax and to collect taxes. So what is our Mishnah talking about? The Gemara gives two examples. We talked about the Ran today in terms of by what right does the government have to come and to collect taxes. Very interesting Ran, making a distinction between a foreign government and a land of Israel and the Jewish government. But again, very hard to argue that the Ran can have application nowadays as well. And finally, the second Mishnah, again, giving other examples where could very well be based on the context that what you meant, what you said is not to be taken literally, and the Mishnah's point is no. If you said it, what comes out is to be taken literally.